Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now, Chuck and Winkler. Two townies talking Wisconsin sports. Covering nothing but your favorite teams. Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, this is Chuck and Winkler on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Oh, yes, Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins. That's Chuck Freeman filling in for Bart Winkler. I'm Ryan Horvath. Bart off today. Load management. He will be back tomorrow, so you can't miss him too much.
I thought the only guy who got load management was the old guy, me.
No, young guys get it now, too. Remember
okay.
Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis?
Okay, I just thought it was like the veteran guys who had, like LeBrons and guys like, not that I'm comparing myself to LeBron.
Well, but, you kind of are the LeBron.
The guys who are the older guys, so we can go the full 365, we need some load management once in a while.
You know, I was a little bit worried, Freems, because I've been looking forward to this day. We always joke around. I've never been in the lead chair, actually, with you. This is my first time. I know Joe's done it. I grew up listening to you. My dad was giving me a hard time because when I first started listening to the station, I was living in Illinois. You know, I'm a huge Wisconsin sports fan.
Sure.
So it was tough for me because it was all Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, a lot of Blackhawks. So I used to listen to you guys. And the only way, there was no radio.com app, which you could download, great app. You could find us, Chuck and Winkler, 6 to 10, Bill Michaels, Big Show. But the only way I'd be able to listen to you guys was through the website. And every once in a while, you know, it would cut out, and it was always after a Packers game, busy Monday. I'd be freaking out. I'd want to listen to you, and it was Wicked at the time. I'd tune in, and, you know, the website would be down. So I'm excited to finally get the chance to work with you one-on-one.
You know, it's funny, because I thought we did a show once before, you and I. You and I were on the air doing something together. I don't remember.
Holden was with us, though.
Well, Holdy was with us. Okay, but that still counts. This is the first time just you and I, then.
Yeah, a lot of responsibility being behind the board today.
Okay, now see, was it your uncle, John Gillespie?
Yeah, he's my cousin, actually.
Okay,
John's
your cousin.
My cousin. Yep, Earl
John.
Was my uncle.
Not his son, but his dad.
Yeah, his dad.
Okay,
too.
His dad, who was he's on TV, does fishing shows.
Yeah.
And I knew John, way back to the 80s when he worked at Channel 4 here, and we used to go to house parties at his house all the time after Brewer games.
Mm-hmm.
After Brewer games, we'd cover the games, and John said, I just want everybody to come over to our house. So we just like, be on the lawn and over there in Whitefish Bay area, which is, a nice little house over there. We'd always go over there stay there probably till 4 o'clock in the morning. So those were the days. So I've come full circle. But, good to have you here. Bart's got the day, load management, we're going to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And, we got a lot to get to today. I mean, it was a great weekend if you feel guilty for going outside or staying inside when it's nice outside, this was the weekend for you.
Right. I saw Bart on Twitter. He was happy. Said this is already the best summer because he likes to stay inside. I was a little nervous, though, because I've been looking forward to this. I had it circled on my schedule. I was like, we're going to be able to break down Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. However, that series wrapped up on Thursday as the Raptors are actually going to celebrate today with their parade. But the Brewers avoid being swept in San Francisco. Anthony Davis heading to L.A. He'll join LeBron and the Lakers. And Gary Woodland wins the 119th U.S. Open by 3 strokes over Brooks Koepka, who did make it interesting at Pebble Beach on Sunday. But Woodland finally captures his first major championship. I know you wanted to get on the golf course yourself, but the rain.
Oh, I did. And, you know, when I get up in the morning on weekends, the first thing I do is I check weather.com
mm-hmm.
to see what it's like outside before I even take a look outside. And I did yesterday because we were going to do a little golfing. We did some on Saturday. And you check the weather map, and it said 55 degrees.
Yep.
And you were up. You sent me an email like at 6:57 on a Sunday morning. Harvey, what are you doing up on Sunday morning at 6:57?
I was up yesterday at 4:30 a.m. preparing the show.
Why?
That's how excited I am.
I mean, that's morning because you're here with us in the mornings,
mm-hmm.
Monday through Friday. I mean, that's our time to sleep.
I know. I need to get life.
Wow. So it was like 6:57. I got this email. I'm like, there's no way he was up this early. Because I didn't get your email till like 8:30.
Well, I'm glad you don't have the alert set, so I'm waking you up at that time.
No. I don't have an alert set at all.
I spent my entire weekend in front of, I have the 3 TV set up now. It was 4. I gave one away to my son. A nice Father's Day gift from the father to the son, I guess. But all weekend long, I watched golf, the College Baseball World Series, which I do get into. a little bit, and I was watching the Brewers, obviously. I was watching the Cubs, the Cardinals. I don't have much of a life, so I was just preparing the show.
Well, none of us do. That's why we follow sports.
Right.
That's what we. So, I mean, I love the fact, I put this tweet out there, Harvey. I love the fact that golf is on prime time. I mean, because we did a little golfing on Saturday, came back, grilled out, and in our room there, boom, we had golf on Saturday night. And that's awesome. I mean, as much as I like to see the majors come to Wisconsin here, it's pretty cool because there was a major there a few years ago. Upstate New York, I was in Washington. Upstate Washington, I want to say. One of the U.S. Opens were up there a few years ago. And the golf was on at prime time. And it was on at like 9:30 at night. I was like, man, this is cool.
Yeah.
And that was this weekend. And like Friday, Saturday night, you know, Sunday, like last night, it was going on till like about 8 o'clock at night. And I thought, I love golf on the West Coast. I don't know what the ratings are, but I got to think they were pretty good. And this was good for golf that they had golf tournaments on the West Coast, which allows, you know, two-hour difference. Since these tournaments usually go to 6, they get done at 8, 9 o'clock at night now.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the ratings, too, because I feel like, and Tiger closed out, if he didn't start as brutal as he did, I mean, he closed that thing out, and then you had Koepka actually make it interesting. He was trying to become the first player since Willie Anderson in 1905 to win 3 consecutive U.S. Opens, but I'm glad he made it interesting towards the end because Woodland dominated throughout the tournament. But I wanted to get your opinion on the coverage on Fox because when they first took over, I know people were ripping Joe Buck. Holly Sanders was on there, not asking the best questions. But I really did actually enjoy the coverage this year. I thought it was actually more focused on the golf rather than the storylines. And I agree with you. I just love golf primetime.
Yeah. I thought they did a nice job. I mean, I don't have any problem with Joe Buck doing golf. I think automatically when you jump into a new sport like Joe was doing, you're going to draw the critics. And they jumped in, I want to say 2015, and it was the one out on the West Coast. And who was with him doing it initially? And they ended up releasing – I can't think of it. Oh, it was Greg Norman. Greg Norman was on the broadcast.
Right.
And they replaced him. But he, they thought he was not prepared. They didn't think he did a good job, and he was not ready for TV. The TV look, but he just wasn't good enough. And then Buck got a lot of criticism. But that's fine. I mean, you're not going to be perfect on those broadcasts. And doing a golf broadcast, man, that just takes so much prep. I mean, Jim Nance makes it look so flawless week after week after week because you got to know a little bit about all these guys.
Right.
And I just marvel at Nance. People are always critical of him, but his homework is impeccable. Same with Joe Buck. I mean, Joe clearly did his homework in all this. Whether you like him as a broadcaster or not, man, he did a pro's job, I thought, in this entire weekend. So I was good with the coverage, man.
I completely agree. And the thing about Jim Nance, it's funny that you bring up his preparation because I had the opportunity to cover an NCAA tournament the first year it went to Des Moines in Iowa. And Jim Nance was calling the game. He was there with Grant Hill. And I think I've told the story that I never really go and approach broadcasters because they're doing their job. I don't want to bother them. And plus, it's embarrassing for me. I look like a fanboy. But with Jim Nance, you know, after the game, I was like, I got to get close to Jim Nance. I just want to ask him about his preparation. And I saw this book that he had. He had every media guide, because this was after media day that I actually approached him, and he had every media guide. And then I actually went up and talked to him a little bit. He was telling me that like 2 weeks after that tournament ends, I don't even think even, he's doing the Masters. So while he's preparing for the NCAA tournament, trying to learn all these Division I college basketball players, he's also doing research on every single golfer on the planet because he's about to call the biggest golf tournament.
Yeah, because he leaves after that Monday night.
Crazy.
And he goes right to the Masters.
Yeah.
He goes right to the Masters, which is insane. That is a tough 2 week stretch. I thought there was a week between this year, but usually it's like he's going from the Final Four and Championship Monday night right to the Masters.
Right. They switched it up a little bit. That's why I was kind of confused. But back then it was. Right.
But until like recently, it's been that. And that's just like a tough stretch. But yeah, I mean, I was fine with the broadcasters. And who were you pulling for yesterday? Were you looking for – see, because I didn't have a horse in the race. Mm-hmm. I didn't care if Koepka won. Gary Woodland, I wouldn't know him if he walked in right now, okay? I didn't care much. I didn't care if he won it. It didn't matter to me. I'm a Woods guy. I like Mickelson. It didn't matter. I was like Ricky Fowler. If he would have won it, I would like to have seen him. But down the stretch there, it didn't matter to me if Koepka won it or not.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I've become a little bit of a Koepka fan because the knock on him was he was a little bit of a jerk or whatever. Now he's trying to play to the crowd. I don't know if you saw the scene with him and the little girl yesterday, and he went over, gave her the ball. Like, he gets it. He's working. He's working on his marketability right now. But I root for the favorites. I was actually rooting for Rory, who was in contention until pretty much on Sunday. He was right there, and then he fell off a little bit. I wouldn't mind seeing Justin Rose, you know, 2013 winner. The thing about Gary Woodland, I'm glad that you brought up the fact that if he walked in, we wouldn't know who he is.
He's faceless.
He's 35 years old. This is his first major. I mean, he had the two top 10 finishes the past 2 years at the PGA Championship, so we kind of saw it. I know he took the lead, I think, heading into the final day last year, but he's never been able to get it done. And then you bring up Ricky. I don't think Ricky's ever going to win a major. I mean, he got off to a hot start.
Opening day, yeah.
But yeah, I'm always rooting for the favorites. I want Tiger in contention. I mean, as good as the ratings probably will end up being, and we'll get an idea today, I'm sure they're much higher with Tiger Woods in contention. I always root for Phil. Glad he made the cut because I like to see him play throughout the weekend. But, you know, I root for the favorites. Rory. Is Jordan Spieth going to win a major anytime soon?
Boy, he just can't put it together.
I remember he was like the next big thing.
Did you see it Thursday or Friday when he was chewing out his caddy?
Yeah.
I mean, he goes to the caddy, two nice shots there, Steve, or whatever the guy's name was, meaning that this caddy gave him the wrong club to use, and he hit it flush, but he just didn't have the, that's always frustrating when you golf, when you use the wrong club, or you leave it short, or you go long, and that's what he was talking about, though. Spieth just seemed like he was struggling out there again, and I don't know what his deal, because putting used to be his forte. He just can't get out of his own way anymore.
No, I completely agree with you. And 414-799-1250. Also, we have some tickets to Summerfest for you today using the hashtag CWTickets. Let us know what you did for Father's Day. And Frames, I'll ask you, did you do anything special yesterday for Father's Day?
I went for a first time ever into the Packer Hall of Fame.
Really?
And we kind of spontaneously did it. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. I go every single year.
Okay. I have not. You know, I just have just taken it for granted all these years. Mm-hmm. So we always make a trip go to Lambeau Field. Shannon, my girlfriend, lives in Green Bay. Right. So me and my boy and her, we always, once a weekend, we're up there. If we're up there, we take a trip over to Lambeau Field just to walk around because, you know, Lambeau Field's Lambeau Field. And we're walking around and we saw the sign that said, Fathers are free today on Father's Day. And we're like, should we go? And she said, yeah, let's go. Or she was asking me if I wanted to go. And I said, oh, I mean, do we got time? And we end up going in there and walking around, and I can't believe I haven't done it before. It was outstanding. I love walking through there, and you know, we didn't take 3 hours to go through it. We did it probably in an hour and 15 minutes, but I like to go back and redo it. It's like watching a movie again. Do it again to see what you missed.
No, I completely agree because there's so much there, and I agree that we take it for granted because the reason I used to go up every single year was because I didn't live in Green Bay, so I would have to plan this out where I'd go to one game, you know, per year. But, I mean, you've been covering the team since for how long?
Yeah, 1981.
Right, so I see why you take it for granted. You're in the real locker room after every single game.
Sure.
You know, you've been on the field at Lambeau Field because that was my favorite part. They don't let you attempt the Lambeau Leap. Which
that's the tour you're talking about.
I do the tour and the Hall of
Fame. Oh, you do both. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I saw there was a package deal for that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done the tour, but never the Hall of Fame. But I love the tour.
You've taken the tour.
I've taken the tour.
Yeah.
Now, see, on a tour, they take you to the roof of the stadium.
I know. It's pretty cool.
And that's pretty cool. Yeah, awesome. You got to make sure you do it on a nice day.
I like going in the press box. Like, okay, this is what this is where Lil Wayne sits when he comes up to the game. I'm like, man, just imagine having this kind of money to sit and watch the game.
Yeah. I mean, you get to see some of the luxury boxes and all that. And, you know, it's really decent. And then we went to the Hall of Fame yesterday and walked through it. You just see all this memorabilia from way back when Lombardi was the coach. Mm-hmm. And I love the history of how the Packers got there and how they became a team and how they almost didn't stick around. And, you know, they negotiated with the NFL and they were short on cash and there were guys in that town who saved the Packers. It's just a really cool story. And I don't know, and I wish I knew, and I want to find out if there's a documentary on the Green Bay Packers early days. I'd love to see it. I mean, how they were in the 20s and 30s and 40s and through the 50s. You know, Lambeau Field's been around since the 50s. We call it a historic Lambeau Field. But, I mean, it's nothing compared to, like Wrigley has been there. Wrigley Field for as much as we want to trash Wrigley, it's been there since Babe Ruth was there. And,
right.
And, you know, they saw the 1906 World Series at Wrigley Field. The Packers had been playing at Lambeau since the 50s. Before that, they played at the old Green Bay East High School, which they called City Stadium. So, you know, it's not like Lambeau has been around for 100 years. The Packers have, just not Lambeau Field. But just walking around that place and going and seeing all the memorabilia that's in the Hall of Fame, I mean, I'm telling you, if you're a Packer fan, you got to go through that. And that just the history of it, showing all the, you know, I saw Leroy's little plaque there, mm-hmm. and saw all the Packer Hall of Famers, and they got stuff dedicated to all the Super Bowls, the Ice Bowl, you know, the Packers in the 50s and the 60s. It's just amazing. And again, you probably got to do it two or three times to really get the full, complete grasp of it. Like, I've never been to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right.
And I've never been to the Basketball Hall of Fame or the Pro Football. And I figured at this point in my life, I would have been there, but I would love to go. Never have been.
And the crazy thing about going to the Packer Hall of Fame or just going to Lambeau in general is I like bringing outsiders. Most of my friends, unfortunately, are Bears fans, so we've been arguing and fighting our entire lives, but they come up to Lambeau, and it's like when you step into like a beautiful church, they're like, now I see what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because to them, it's nuts, because you bring up Wrigley Field, right, or even Soldier Field, and they've been around forever, but you're in a big city, so you're surrounded by traffic. It takes you forever to get into Wrigley or forever to get into Soldier Field. And yeah, there's the rooftops and expensive places, but the crazy thing about Lambeau Field is, like, you're just in Green Bay. My buddies are all like, oh, how do I find the stadium? It's just right there. There's houses. There's a neighborhood. There's really nothing there. And then there's this professional football team in this small town. So it's just, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, what's taking over Wrigley is Wrigley was just a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, you'd be just driving on one of the roads there, and all of a sudden, boom, right into Wrigley Field. They had no lights. It just was a regular ballpark.
Yeah.
And now there's hotels, and all the bars in the area have been built up a little bit. And, of course, the light standards went in 1988. And now Lambeau Field's kind of turned into the same thing. There was Lambeau Field, and you had all these mom-and-pop houses around it.
Yep.
Now these mom-and-pop houses are being knocked down, not only by the Packers, but people themselves, and they're building these big party houses. So it's like Lambeau is a lot different than it was 10, 20, even 30 years ago. What's it going to be like 20 years from now? They're going to continue to knock stuff down, and there's, you know, there's the whole Titletown district. I don't know. They're really turning it into corporate, the Lambeau Field. But Lambeau Field is always going to be Lambeau Field, but the surrounding parts of Lambeau Field are just, you know, it's a money-making machine. That's what it is.
Hey, as long as they're able to bring in some more pass rushers and free agents, I'm fine with it. Once again, 414-799-1250. Bart out today. Load management. Ryan Horvath filling in. It's Chuck and Winkler. Coming up, the Brewers, they do avoid the sweep in San Francisco. Also, Team USA women's soccer, a perfect example of how we're going soft in this country. Coming up here on Chuck and Winkler, you're listening to 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Now, it's Chuck and Winkler's Brew Crew Review, brought to you by Bofording Beer. Bofording is Milwaukee's smooth drinking import. Try it at your nearest Total Wine location. This is the only station Brewers fans need. Sports Radio, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And he rips one down the right field line. That's going to get to the fence. Gamel running with two outs as that one gets stuck in the fence. And that's a bad break for the Brewers.
Yeah, that one went right through the gate.
The first base umpire is jogging out to take a look. Pilar raised his hand right away.
Yeah, that's a tough break. That would have scored a run.
Brian Anderson on the call, Fox Sports Wisconsin. It was a tough weekend for the Brewers, depending on how you look at it, as they do avoid the sweep yesterday. Friday night, they get beat by the Giants 5-3. The Giants homer three times, gives Zach Davies his first loss. Saturday, you get bounced 8-7. Steven Vogt with two triples in that game, which is just ridiculous. Then yesterday, you avoid the sweep with your two heroes, Eric Thames and Jesus Aguilar, homering to help the Brewers with a 5-3 victory. Also, Christian Yelich, two doubles, extends his season-high hitting streak to 13 games. Now batting .472, 25 for 53 with five homers over that stretch, including that one we just heard there. Have you ever seen anything like that, Frames? He hit it so hard, got stuck into the wall. They kind of screwed him over a little bit there by calling that a double. He would have had another RBI. But...
Yeah. I'm glad it didn't end up costing him.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he's such a good hitter. I mean, he can hit. I mean, his... The one thing about Yelich is he's got such a level swing that he can do stuff like that. He's not, you know, he's got 26 home runs, but he's not looking for home run when he gets up to the plate. He really is, and a lot of players say this, but he really is looking just trying to hit the ball hard somewhere, and it goes out because he's got such good torque at the plate, and you know he takes advantage of Miller Park, the short porch in right field. But he's just a good hitter. He is. He's just a damn good hitter. I was glad to see Aguilar finally pull a home run. You know, that's his first home run, his fifth of the year. First time he's hit one in left field this year.
Yep.
Unreal.
First in June.
Unreal, man. And, I mean, he's gone this far. It's June 17th, and he's finally hit his first home run to left field. And Thames homered. But Saturday's game, man, that would hurt. That hurt. They got the early lead, and they start walking guys. Their relief wasn't very good, and... you know, they blew an early lead in that game. They're up 4-1. Ended up losing 8-7. Still lost 2-3. Going into San Francisco, they're not that good of a team. And they weren't a very good offensive team. But that Bruce Bochy always gets his guys. You can't ever take that guy's teams lightly. This is his outgoing year. He's a Hall of Fame manager. He's going, you know, he's been to the World Series. So you can never, you always know you're going to get a good effort when you got to play that guy's teams.
I completely agree with you. And 414-799-1250, you're listening to Chuck and Winkler. I guess we wouldn't be sports talk radio if I didn't have a question. My question that I'm asking everybody out there, 414-799-1250, and Freems, I want to start it obviously with you, is why are teams so awful when they travel to the West Coast? Like, let's say, okay, here's what I'm thinking. I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm the first to tell you we got to stop doing this in Major League Baseball because there's so much parity, especially in the National League this season. But when you look at that schedule, you think, okay, here's where you make up some ground, because you got the Cubs, they're playing in Los Angeles. They're facing the Dodgers' three best pitchers. The Dodgers are on a tear right now. Cubs end up getting one over the weekend. You know, they steal one game. They
the home run on Saturday night by
Rizzo, right?
Rizzo, yep. Yeah, cranked one.
Yep, and then last night they blow the lead, so... The Dodgers take care of business. As much as we hate to see the Dodgers win, in that situation, we love it.
Of course we do.
And then you look at the schedule and you say, okay, Brewers in San Fran, but playing the last place Giants. This is a team that's already pretty much mathematically, I mean, not literally, but they're pretty much eliminated from the postseason already because of the division they're in. They're going to be sellers most likely at the deadline. This is why we can't circle these games and count these as wins, though. But... why are teams so awful on the West Coast, especially when you go to San Francisco? I understand when you go to Miami, you're out partying the night before. But why are teams so bad on the West Coast, do you think?
I just think that you go out there, you got the time difference. You know, the teams haven't been bad out there. I mean, Los Angeles has always been good for the most part. San Francisco's had a good run. San Diego, the Brewers won 3 in a row to start the season out in San Diego last year. Seattle's always been tough for the Brewers when they were in the American League or when they've had to go out there and play while they're in the National League. For whatever reason, I think the time difference, just traveling out there, and it's not only the teams in the Midwest, the East Coast teams, that's a three-hour difference for those teams.
Mm-hmm.
They go out there and they struggle too. Maybe the time difference. You know, these guys are very much creatures of habit, and I think maybe the time difference has something to do with it too, because they're playing... You know, the Yankees are going out there. They're playing at 10 o'clock.
Right.
The Marlins are going out there. They're playing at 10 o'clock. The Red Sox, the Phillies, they're playing at 10 o'clock out in the West Coast. It just, I think that has something to do with it, too.
Yeah, and I didn't mean the question specifically even for the Brewers, because I was on the roundtable with Tim Allen a couple weeks back, and he asked the same question, and I said the same thing. I said the same exact I gave the same answer. I said they're all creatures of habit, especially if you take the veterans on the team like Ryan Braun. You wake up pretty much the same time every day, most likely. You're eating the same probably 2 to 3 breakfast foods and lunch, getting your same workout in. It's all just the same regimen. So I completely agree, creatures of habit. Also, you know, when you're at home, you're staying in your bed, you have the same routine, but when you're on the road, you're probably like us, like when you're in Toronto, eating out. Taking Ubers, going and checking things out, probably hitting up different bars because you know the same 2 to 3 nightclubs you're going in Milwaukee. So I think it's almost like a mini vacation. You know, all these guys have a wife and kids. It's kind of like me. When my wife and my son go out of town, I'm going to party a little bit.
You know, some of these guys, though I mean, they're not. It's not like the old days. These guys are playing video games. These guys don't go. It's not like the 90s or 80s. These guys don't go out as much as they used to.
Which
they
is
don't. They
crazy.
Take care of themselves. These guys, there's no alcohol in locker rooms anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They banned alcohol. I mean, players used to sit around locker rooms after games, drink, play cards. You never see that. The 80s Brewers, they would sit in that clubhouse and Yount and Molitor and all those guys, Gorman Thomas, Ogilvy, Vukovic, these guys would sit around, drink beer, play cards, and swear all day after games. They'd be sitting in there. Their fans would be waiting from outside, and they'd be in there playing cards after games for hours and hours and hours. I mean, Augie could tell us the stories when he comes in.
Right.
I've seen it firsthand being in that locker room. It's not the same way anymore. These guys the game is over, they're showering, and for the most part, they're out of there.
Yeah.
So I just think that the life has changed a little bit for these guys a little bit. They're just looking to get out. There's none of that locker room stuff and post-game like there used to be. It's a business. Hey, they want to go in, get their work done, and then get out.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you look at the players in the 80s and the 70s and you look at their body types, like looking at Christian Yelich and Ryan Braun, like these guys, A, they want to take care of themselves and stay in shape, so they're eating healthy, they're avoiding mm-hmm. alcohol for the most part. But not only that, also you have TMZ out there and social media. So let's say, I saw an article back a couple weeks back, the Chicago Cubs after a game, they all went out to a bar and then they hit up a McDonald's and TMZ followed them. So they had Anthony Rizzo like at this bar pounding drinks and then in the McDonald's drive-thru. So that's the other thing, is then if you go out the next day, you lose, or you go 0-4, the media is going to rip you because
sure.
you were out the night before.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like I saw a funny story last season. I remember when the Dodgers were on a tear, they were interviewing Matt Kemp in the clubhouse. And he was talking about, man, after the games, I like to go to a nice restaurant. We're in New York. I want to go to a nightclub. He's like, I asked Cody Bellinger, who's 23 years old. He's going home to play Fortnite.
Yeah.
Because it's safe. These guys go home, play video games, and they're at the ballpark the next day in shape. 414-799-1250. We go out to Franklin, talk to John. What's up, John?
Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Hope all the fathers and sons made the best of the day yesterday once the rain moved out. On this West Coast thing, I mean, it's got to take a toll with a couple-hour shift in the time zone. I mean, it's not making excuses. I mean, it is what it is. Everyone has to deal with it that comes from the East and Central. But, I just unrelated topic, maybe. I don't know. But watching the cover, I watched a lot of that game with Davies, and he was yawning in the clubhouse before he started. And I was thinking to myself, man, you know, how's he going to get himself going? It looks like the guy's a little tired over there. But, the thing with Jimmy Nelson, and every Brewer fan, everyone's pulling for this guy to turn it around. But Council's going to have to be patient, man. I think he's made so many good moves, but he miscalculated Nelson falling off the cliff. And I'm sure he learned his lesson. Because, I mean, once he walks Baumgartner in that second game, it's time to get somebody up and throwing.
You know, you're right about that. He stuck with him too long, I thought.
Too damn long.
I agree.
You wait till the guy loads the bases.
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Yeah.
He couldn't throw a strike.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
Take an injury. Whatever you got to do, get somebody up and get them out there. Because Jimmy, he had a pretty decent performance. There was a little bit of progress, I think, from his first start. But this may be all you get out of him for a while. And you're going to have to just deal with it. You're not just going to get Jimmy back. Let's give the kid some time. And, outside of that, I mean, they salvaged the game yesterday, thank God, and let's see what we do with the Padres.
And you knew Stephen Voit, he's hanging around he was just hanging around the team all year long last year, hoping to keep with the team this year and keep his job. I mean, he was a great clubhouse guy, despite the injury that kept him out all year.
Mm-hmm.
He stuck around, he was around, he didn't go home like a Matt Garza might do. He stuck around and helped guys out and was really good about the whole thing, plus, he was getting paid. Okay, he was getting paid. But he was around the team a lot. And then the team said, well, Steve, we're not going to have you around anymore. We're going to upgrade from the catcher spot. So he was not asked back, and he went to free agency and he ended up signing with San Francisco, and you knew he was going to have one of these games. He was going to make his presence felt, and that was huge for him. I mean, two triples.
I'm fine with the revenge game. Right.
Yeah, that was a revenge game for him.
Yeah, two triples, outrageous. I'm glad that John brought up the pitching. That's kind of what I wanted to hit on. And I know we talk about it every week, but right now when I think about this team, they're 40-31 on the season. You got a full one game over the Cubs, Cardinals 3.5 back, Pittsburgh 8 games back, Cincinnati 8 games back. I just still feel like you need somebody to eat some innings. I mean, look at Zach Davies. Gets his first loss on September 22nd last year at Pittsburgh, so that's impressive. Gives up 3 runs and 6 hits, but just goes 5 innings. Jimmy Nelson, he was cooking early. Had the 6 strikeouts, but gives up 4 runs, 5 hits, something like that. Once again, only goes 4 innings. I was on the round table once again with Bill Schmidt and Tim Allen this past weekend. They said, what do you want to see from Jimmy Nelson? You know, when do you expect him to be back to the old Jimmy Nelson, or does he ever get back there?
Well,
and I said, I just want him to eat up some innings.
Well, here's
5 or 6.
Here's the one guy who I don't get why Council keeps running him out there, and he's got more confidence in him than any Brewer fan has. Why is Alex Claudio ever in a tight spot?
Right.
It was an 8-6 game. They brought Claudio in the 8th inning, 4 hits, gave up a run, so now it's 8-6. Instead of 7-6, it's 8-6. And then Yelich hits the home run in the 9th inning. So instead of a 1-run game to go into the top of the 9th inning, Claudio gives up a run on 4 hits. Burns kind of bailed him out a little bit there. And the damage could have been a lot worse. But Alex Claudio, coming in, he's giving up inherited runs. He's giving up his own runs. I don't get why they keep running him out there in critical spots. Man, it's just they got to somehow upgrade from him. They're going to stay in this. They on a pennant race, I have no trust in Claudio. That was a bad signing. They wasted a draft pick. Not very good. Hauser got his lunch handed to him. He's been so good, but he got his lunch handed to him on Saturday. He came on in relief of Nelson. He started walking guys. But for the most part, you know, you got to get Claudio. You got to get somebody better than Claudio. You need some bullpen help to help this team.
I saw one name that may be available possibly at the deadline. We're going to talk about that. 799-1250 when Chuck and Winkler returns here on The Fan. Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakery. Ryan Horvath in today for Bart Winkler. He'll be back tomorrow out with some load management. Chuck Freeman here today. Brewers do avoid the sweep in San Francisco. They win yesterday 5-3. Eric Thames, Jesus Aguilar, homer in the win. Matt Albers comes in a big situation, pitches the 5th for the win, allows just one base runner to score after leaving Chase Anderson, who loads the bases with no outs. Chase yesterday gives up 3 runs in 4-plus innings. So, once again, just another starter who couldn't eat up some innings. So, Freems, wanted to bring up this little article that I saw over the weekend. Now, a lot of talks, we keep bringing up Madison Bumgarner, who we saw this past weekend. His best days most likely behind him, but also, I think maybe just a change of scenery would help him out. We saw it with guys like Justin Verlander. Historically, we've seen it with teams that are making a run for the pennant. You know, Johnny Cueto, you bring over a guy, an ace, and then he kind of finds his stuff once again when he's actually pitching in situations that matter, and not for a dead last team. Like, do you think that's the case with Bumgarner, or do you think he's finished?
I wouldn't spend a lot on him. I wouldn't. I don't know. I saw when he pitched at Miller Park last September, I was like, man, this isn't like the same Madison Bumgarner we saw a few years ago. He hit the grand slam to Jonathan Scope.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I wouldn't give up all. I don't think his market value. I'd buyer beware on that one. Even Will Smith. You know, you hear about the Brewers and other teams being interested in Will Smith.
Yep.
This guy came out with Tommy John. Now, I wouldn't be giving up top prospects for Smith, who was once with the Brewers once before, and the Brewers traded him to San Francisco, got two prospects who ended up not doing anything with the Brewers. And I think Susak, who was a catcher, is still with the Royals organization. Bickford, I think, is out of baseball. I would not give, again, top prospects to get Will Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. We had David Kaplan on the show a couple weeks back, who's out in Chicago, and he said the Cubs might be looking, even after the Craig Kimbrell signing, to add another lefty to that bullpen. So I'd want Will Smith mainly just to keep him out of Chicago, because if they get another lefty in that bullpen, they could be trouble.
But the Cubs can't put it together.
No, they really can't.
They cannot. They lost 3 of 4 to the Dodgers this weekend. They were lucky to win Saturday night with Rizzo hitting that two-run home run off Jansen, and then the Dodgers came back and won last night. The Cubs, they're floundering by their standards, just like they were last year. They're 8, 9, 10 games over the 500 mark, but you look at that team, they should be better than that. I mean, there are sometimes you see them and it's like, man, how is this team struggling like they are?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. John Lester's been shaky. Now Kyle Hendricks heading to the IL. That's been their best starting pitcher. I mean, he's going to be a Cy Young candidate.
Although
possibly.
Darvish is pitching better.
Yeah, Darvish gave him a great start, and he did it in Los Angeles, which is probably huge for his psyche because that was his big thing. Yeah. I remember the Cubs signed him, and he was like, "Well, I don't know how I'm gonna fare when I have to go to Los Angeles in the postseason, and the crowd's gonna be on me because you know the Dodgers fans obviously he couldn't get out of the third inning in the World Series a couple years back and was tipping his pitches, so they're not the biggest Yu Darvish fans. But so we keep hearing the names like Madison Bumgarner, obviously Will Smith out of the bullpen. A couple years ago, it was Sonny Gray, who thank God they didn't make the move for. Another name, thank God they didn't make a move for to go off real quick. Chris Archer is terrible. Has there been a worse trade?
Oh, God, yeah.
And that's a great example of why it's always a gamble to bring over a starting pitcher, no matter the age. I mean, people keep bringing up the age for Madison Bumgarner, but look at a young guy even like Chris Archer.
Chris
Archer.
You never
know what you're going to get.
Sonny Gray. And we're talking about guys who aren't proven great pitchers.
So one guy that is a proven pitcher, and Ken Rosenthal had this actually yesterday over the weekend, a story out of Washington saying Nationals general manager Mike Rizzo says he's not even considering the possibility of trading Max Scherzer. But if the Nats decide to listen to offers for their ace righty, the interest likely would be intense and not simple. He's a 3-time Cy Young Award winner. He's 34 years old, however. I know they were hoping to put something together. You know, the Nats are, I believe, 6 games under 500 right now. They're 8.5 games back in the NL East. So if they're out of contention, let's say, and we get close to the deadline, Scherzer, a little bit up there in age, but we've saw what he could do. Cy Young candidate. Mm-hmm. His stuff is nasty. Do you trade prospects for a guy like that and you go all in this season or no? Because it would probably cost you Kessin Hira. Let's be honest. I mean, the Nationals, if they're giving up arguably the best starting pitcher in the last 10 years, it's going to cost a lot.
All right. Scherzer is making $37 million right now.
That's the thing. It's that contract.
$37
million. Yeah.
Okay. If you trade it for him, it's not a rental because you'd have him for 2020 when he's making $35 million, close to $36 million, and 2021 when he's making $34.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would love to have Scherzer. I just don't think and we could sit here all day and say, well, it's not our money, and you know the Brewers need to figure it out if they can get a guy like that. It's like us or any business adding salary, you know, and adding that type of salary. People look at the bottom line today more than ever in baseball. Even the Yankees, you know, they went out and got Encarnacion over the weekend, but they're not as free spending as they once were. Sure, they'll spend money on guys, but not as much as they once was. Used to be every big-name free agent. Bryce Harper would end up in New York. Whoever. If there's a big-name free agent, ultimately that guy's going to end up in New York. It's not the case anymore. And a guy like Scherzer, sure, he's a great pitcher, but $35 million, I don't see the Brewers going there.
I'm with you. It's just I look at Zach Davies going 5 innings, and I look at Jimmy Nelson going 4 innings, and Chase Anderson going 4 innings, and then I look at the key stat for Scherzer. 100 innings already this season, leads the NL, a 33% strikeout rate, and 6 with a 2.81 ERA.
Sure.
So if the Nats trade him, I mean, if they do trade him, it's going to be within the next 6.5 to 7 weeks. Yeah. I don't think they're going to. I think that
they get a load back for him, too.
You still have... I thought they were going to go full rebuild if they did lose Bryce Harper. You still have a lot of good young talent. I mean, I think a couple of us actually predicted them to win the division. But nothing really shocks me anymore. But you also make a great point. Like, even with no salary cap, teams don't want to set themselves back. Like, the Yankees don't want to set themselves back. You don't want to give up prospects. You look at what the Cubs did to get Chapman a couple of years ago, or even what they did to get a couple of their starting pitchers this year, and all those guys are taking off now. Like, look at the White Sox team, all those young prospects. So that's what's scary if you're the Brewers. Like, yeah, you go all in. Let's say you bring over a guy like Scherzer or Bumgarner, and you're still a game away from the World Series. You fall in Game 6 or Game 7 of the NLCS. Now you lost 3 or 4 of your best prospects in your future. You know, while I'm not the sustained success guy, I'm all in for the chip. Also, at the same point, I don't want to set myself back 10 years.
Now, the Cubs farm system has been depleted over recent years.
You mentioned it's garbage.
The Quintana the trade, they gave some their good prospects. You know, some of these guys are with the White Sox now. What would the Cubs have to offer to get Max Scherzer? to get him out. I mean, do they have enough in their farm system to do that?
No.
Do the Brewers have enough in their farm system to get a guy like him? Because he's got, again, he's with the team for two more years. The Brewers would have him for 2.5 years, but they're just not going to pay that salary. And somebody will say, well, do you want to win a pennant? If you want to win a pennant, this is the guy you got to get. Well, but at what cost? This is where the salary cap should come in. Now, the team should be able to look at this and say, well, can we afford him? Can we fit him under the salary cap? No, we can't, so we can't go after this guy.
I think this is a great weekend to ask this question, or a great Monday, I should say, after this weekend. What makes this team, what puts this team over the top? I mean, they're right there. You got a game lead over the Chicago Cubs. Look at their payroll. What puts this team over the top? Is it another starting pitcher, or is it a guy like Will Smith? And it doesn't have to be Will Smith, an older guy that demands that much money, but a lefty out of the bullpen. Where do you want to add? Add to the bullpen or add to the starting pitching?
Well, here's what they have to do. Some of the guys in that lineup got to get going. First of all, it starts with our team. Now, Thames and Aguilar, we said forever. Yeah. Those bats have got to get going. We saw a little bit yesterday. You know, they both hit home runs. Shaw had some nice at-bats over the weekend. He's got to continue to go forward on that and continue to play better. They need contributions from him. So if they don't get contributions from their corners, like guys like Shaw and that first base spot, they're not going anywhere. But, of course, they need another starter or even another two starters and maybe another arm for that bullpen. But they could get another starter, and Harvey, they can get another bullpen, but if the guys who are the core of this team, you know, those eight guys, I mean, thank goodness they got Grandal. Where would they be at the catcher spot if they didn't get Grandal? They need some of these guys who are the regular eights on that team to produce on a regular basis to give Yelich some help. You know, see, some of these regulars who are carrying their weight but others aren't need everybody. They need everybody in that, all eight of those guys, to play well.
Yeah, 799-1250. What puts this Brewers team over the top? Another starting pitcher, another bat. I'd like somebody just to get on the bags as well. I brought up on the On Deck show again this weekend, I said, Lorenzo Cain, he's not getting any younger. And I didn't mean that he's old. He's the same age as me. I feel great. I bounce out of bed in the morning. But when he's running into walls left and right, like, I just feel like the injuries are kind of piling up a little bit. I'd like to give him a little bit more rest. Not that he's old, but 32 years old, and you're bouncing, you're running into the wall. You're
he's even older than that, isn't he? He's got to be 34 at this point, isn't he?
Cain? I thought he was 32.
I thought he might be 34.
I've got to pull that up then.
I thought he might. I mean, either way, you know, I hear you on that. But, you know, Cain, he got a rest yesterday. They put Gamble in center field. But he, you know, he's another guy who's average. We talked about this on Friday. His average is slowly coming down week after week. It has drifted down. He was batting the 290s.
248 this season?
Yeah, 280s and the 270s. Now he's down to 250.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. We keep saying Travis Shaw is going to figure it out. Jesus is going to figure it out. And what scares me a little bit is like Travis Shaw gets on base twice, and it's a positive thing. And I know that he's got to break out of this slump, but we're getting excited over nothing, over just him getting on the bags, over Zeus finally getting a pitch and knocking it out of the park. And I see everybody kind of coming around. Like, I'm not really worried when Ryan Braun struggles every season and we're saying, okay, it's time to get Braun out of the lineup. I never worry because I know that Braun's going to be Braun. But with Zeus, I don't know that Zeus ever has the type of season like he did in the first half of the year last year. It has nothing to do with the home run derby. I just feel like pitching staffs and pitchers have figured him out, because when you go in the clubhouse, you see yeah, I mean, everybody's just watching film.
Cain is 33, by the way.
33, yeah. Thank you. So 33. Yeah. But so you have so much videotape on these guys, and I think pitchers have just figured Zeus out. I don't think he's ever going to have that type of season ever again. I don't know that you could get anything on the market for him because he's been so bad. I mean, what was that, his first homer in June?
Well, his bat has been so slow. And, you know, these pitching coaches and these catchers, these guys go over scouting reports and videotape all the time.
Right.
So they're able to detect the guy's flaw. And that's the terrific thing about Yelich. Everybody's got a flaw in their swing, but somehow Yelich has not been able to be figured out yet. But a guy like Aguilar, who's got a very slow bat, and I mentioned earlier that this is the first time he's pulled a ball for a home run this year, they got something on Aguilar where he cannot deliver. And he has not made an adjustment back. And Council said this last year. He said there's going to be a time when teams are going to make an adjustment to Aguilar, and he's going to have to counter and adjust back. Mm-hmm. Aguilar is not – that time has come, and Aguilar has not made the adjustment to – other teams pitching.
No, I completely agree. Like, I still feel like he could get something for Travis Shaw just because of his history. I still feel like some of the other guys will turn things around. Even Eric Thames had his 10th homer of the season yesterday, and Thames has been hitting the ball a little bit better. But Jesus, I just don't trust him, and I don't know that he figures it out anytime soon. We still got a lot to go here on Chuck and Winkler here on a Monday, the Monday following Father's Day. Anthony Davis heading to Los Angeles. Who should be the favorite to win the NBA Finals in 2020? The Milwaukee Bucks or the Los Angeles Lakers? It's Chuck and Winkler here on 105.7 FM. Fan.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.